Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio. This is Proteus' primetime show. We're coming at you live and direct from the mean streets of Brantford, Ontario. And tonight, with me, I have the great honor to have my man, Rodney James, at RodneyJames138. Rodney, I cannot find your intro at all on the board right now. So you know what we're going to do, Rodney, in post? We'll put your music in right now. Welcome to the show,
we'll
Rodney.
Go right into it.
Glad to have you. That's right.
Thanks, buddy. Greetings. How are you?
Well, we're doing well tonight. We're doing well. And, of course, we have Rodney on the show tonight. And if any new listeners to the show are coming on and they are not familiar with Rodney James, please go back into the archives. We have interviewed Rodney, and he's been on the show many times. And you can follow him on Twitter at Rodney James, R-O-D-N-E-Y, James, J-A-M-E-S, 138. And, of course, we're going to have Rodney on the show tonight to talk a little bit about your ill-fated fight at LFA 6. But also,
That makes it ill-fated fight makes it sound like I did fight and got my ass whooped.
No.
So, yeah.
That's not what I'm saying at all. If anybody is familiar to the show, we had Rodney on, and Rodney was looking for a fight on this show, and LFA had booked him, and it just didn't go through. But we'll get into that, Rodney, in just a bit. First, I want to talk about, not only did you have a fight somewhat booked on this show and trained for it, but you also got to cover it as media. So let's cover it all at once. Let's let you get it off your
let's
chest,
do it.
And let's just cover it all at once.
It's still on my chest, brother. You know what I mean? I'm so fresh off of training my ass off for 2 months, really. You know, training really hard with some killers. But we got to go back. We got to take it back about a week, actually, because I've got some other cool stuff too leading up to that. In the final week of preparation, you know, I was out in Vegas for UFC 209 and for the MMA awards. Now, I didn't have
we'll
media
get into that
credentials
too.
For 209, but I did for the MMA awards. So, while I was out there, I got to pop into Extreme Couture a couple times. I dropped into a class with Ryan Couture, did some good, you know, cage wrestling work, you know, always working on that at the gym that I come from here in San Antonio. Probably one of the things that I'm the worst at, so that's where I need the most work, but it's also a skill that I've been developing that I can get good at because I'm very, very strong, you know, and I'm tall, so I have a lot of leverage, especially for 170. I'm big, too, for that weight. And then I fell into a jiu-jitsu class with Robert Fallis over there, the legendary Team Quest, you know, pioneer coach. So it was cool, man. It's a good experience. But yeah, we'll talk about whatever you want to lead off with, brother.
Well, I'd love to get into LFA first because this is the event that I wanted to cover because it was so close and we had talked about it before the event and we tried to get you on during your training camp, but you were training so hard and we couldn't get you on and we couldn't make the times mesh because you were in training camp. Right.
That's right. So right about now is where the Shark Tank is happening. This time, you know, Thursday nights, that's where all the killers meet up at Ohano Academy in San Antonio. Of course, one of our, you know, our star fighters, you know, our premier fighters out of that gym, was the headliner for LFA 6. That's Ray Rodriguez, of course. We got to get him on the show, man. I already talked to him about it. He's definitely game. he got really overwhelmed with media, man. He got bombarded. You heard him on Junkie, I hope. He was making all kinds of rounds. James Lynch had him on, and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, but yeah, man, he's a tough, tough cat, you know, hard worker. So, yeah, I'd like to take it right from the top, honestly. I mean, you know, speaking of the main event, that was huge, man. It was huge for the school. It was huge for Ray. You know, everybody was real proud of him, especially to go in there and get the win, seventh consecutive win. You know, his record is 12-4 now as a pro. It's incredible. And on his recent win streak, you know, five of those seven victories were by submission. He's beaten, he's beaten a UFC veteran. He's beaten a couple Bellator vets, you know. So that's, you know, the resume is stacking up. So it was a good night. It was a good night for Ohana Academy because just prior to that, you also had Gleason Cutis, a.k.a. Pony. That's how I know him, as Pony. And you might have seen this viral video/image that's kind of been circulating that as of late. He actually submitted his opponent with a grapevine leg lock. In other words, he got into the mount and secured a really deep grapevine within seconds. He actually submitted his opponent. He's a tough, tough guy in Dimitri Ivy. You know, all the fights were great, man. We had two pros, you know, two pros that I trained with that were on the card, and the two amateur guys, and you know, they led off the card, of course. And it was just one finish after another, man. All the fights resulted in a finish until you got to Mackenzie Dern, Captain Roy. And, you know, Cat Roy is a local a San Antonio gal, you know, a Golden Gloves boxer. You know, and I said this before, you know, LFA is not like some other organizations that we know about where they try to build stars up by, you know, feeding them tomato cans. I think the last fight Mackenzie Dern had before this was a kickboxer with a pretty good record. And then, of course, Cat Roy, who was a Golden Gloves boxer. And, you know, that right there is the recipe to beat up a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. I mean, if you look at an extreme example at the highest level, think of Ronda, who's, you know, primarily an outstanding, you know, just amazing world-class grappler that her hands just didn't quite develop with the rest of her skill set. And we saw what Amanda Nunes was able to do simply by throwing punches, not really playing much more offense, you know, besides that, just connecting. So that was a good fight. That actually, to me, that was my pick for fight of the night, man. That was an awesome fight. It was fun. You know, Catherine Roy is a self-professed, I don't know if she's joking. I heard her say, you know, publicly, you know, she's a white belt. And that's pretty crazy. Mackenzie Dern is known for this being this jiu-jitsu ace. And she was not able to submit Roy. She was not able to, she wasn't able to hurt her. I mean, when they were on the feet, it was a lot more competitive, you know, than one might have thought beforehand. You know, Mackenzie Dern showed really improved striking, incredible striking, actually. And they were just kind of going back and forth. And then Mackenzie just started to sort of dominate on the ground, but she couldn't submit her. She beat her up and just could not get her to quit. So it was a fun fight. And what else? And then I told you about Dimitri Ivy, his brother, Anthony Ivy. This is a guy you need to look out for. He's a Bellator vet also. He is, I think, 3-1 now, maybe 4-1. He won his fight with a quick submission, rear naked choke in the first round against a tough, tough guy, a knockout artist in Arthur Ashton. And so that was a good night, man. That was a good night for San Antonio.
Yeah, so it's crazy because I kept following you on Twitter and it was crazy to see you covering the event that you were supposed to be fighting on, and it was funny to see your reaction afterwards when LFA was, and I'm not ripping on LFA right now, all you LFA people that are listening, I'm not ripping on you, but it was interesting to see you say, like, you know, the LFA is going to you know, retweet all the promotion that you're doing for their event, but you were trying to get your plight of having a fight and getting a fight booked the next time that LFA comes to Texas, and they were unwilling to retweet or comment at all about that. And it was kind of interesting to me. So let's get into that.
Yeah, it was a little weird. You notice that, right? Because, like, everything I tweeted...
Yeah, you seem pretty aggravated, man. You seem pretty aggravated.
Well, everything I tweeted in terms of content with the hashtag LFA6 and the tag LFA Fighting, you know, that I tweeted from the event, they retweeted everything. And then, you know, I just kind of threw a little feeler out there. I was like, and I don't know who runs that Twitter account. I have no idea. You know,
sure.
It could be Mike Jackson, for all I know. I ran into him there, you know, we you know, exchanged pleasantries. I get the feeling he doesn't like me all that much. You know, I don't know. We used to be cool. So I don't know what happened. I don't know who runs that thing. But, yeah, they just completely ignored me. I did, you know, of course, behind the scenes, I talked to Mark Bieri, who's the matchmaker for LFA. He was the matchmaker for RFA, now for Legacy FA. And you know, he and I have been, you know, he's the one that booked me the last time I fought in San Antonio when it was still RFA. He and I have stayed in touch through email correspondence pretty regularly since about December. That's when I think I told you, were one of the first people I told, you know, that I found out that they were coming to San Antonio.
Yeah.
And as the card started to get built, he stayed in touch with me, you know, and he reached out at one point. And I think, I don't know, we were about a month out or so from the event, which is still plenty of time to really buckle down on your training. And I was already training, so I was ready. I was, you know, and I was just getting more prepared. And then he just emailed me out of the blue and said, "Hey, man, I can't find a 170-pounder, you know, to fight on this card, man." And I go, that just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, there's a lot of guys between Austin, San Antonio, Corpus Christi. There's all kinds of 170-pound amateur fighters out here. What is the problem? So I reached out to several people, reached out to Pete Spratt, you know, former UFC, you know, old school UFC veteran. He's got a gym here in San Antonio. I reached out to Colton Smith up in Fort Hood. He's a, you know, a former UFC fighter, Ultimate Fighter winner. Bubba McDaniel, who's based out of Texas, another Ultimate Fighter alumni, you know, a buddy of mine. And every single one of them said, "Hey, man, you know what, I'll talk to some people, see what I can do, I'll reach out, you know." And then I even had a couple folks kind of bite back, you know, and say, "Yeah, hey, I got a guy. And next thing you know, it was like, I'm waiting, days are going by. I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to be a nuisance, I don't want to nag, but, you know, I'm hitting up these other promoters, these other coaches, and I'm saying, "Hey, what's up with your guy?" You know, again, this is all taking place privately behind the scenes. And
sure.
Yeah, I'm just kind of getting the same crap, you know. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, you know, it's part of it has to do with my age. And let me explain that. I'm 35 years old. You know, people, if you look me up on Tapology, you'll see a guy who's 2-0, two first-round submissions. There's a photo on there where I look like the fucking Russian from Rocky IV. And but then you see the age, 35, and it's like you know, you're like, okay, well, you know this guy's tough. You know, I only have two fights. But it's kind of a lose-lose situation. Most of the guys in the amateur circuit, they're younger guys, man. You know what I mean? And for them, you know, to get beat up by a guy who's 35, you know, that just, it's a lose-lose situation. Even if they beat me, it's like, well, I beat up a 30, you know, because I remember when you were, you know, in your early 20s, you thought 35 was old. I don't feel old whatsoever. I'm in great shape. I don't look 35. But
yeah.
You know, when you were 22, you thought 35 was old as fuck. You know what I'm saying? So they're looking at me like, well, if I get beat up by this old dude, then I suck. But if I beat up this old dude, then it's not really an accomplishment. So I think that plays a factor. That's just my paranoia talking. I have no factual information whatsoever to back that up. That's just what I feel. But anyway, I got a chance to talk to Mark, you know, cage side before. I showed up. I got my media pass. It was kind of chaotic there. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, it's in Bellator, like when you cover a Bellator event, it's a lot more controlled, you know, there's like a press row, there's like a designated area. This was kind of more the Wild West, which I was cool with. I was able to just kind of traverse the whole landscape, go backstage, you know, nobody said anything to me otherwise. So that was cool. And of course I had a lot of teammates fighting and stuff like that. So I was in the midst of all the action. But before it kicked off, I sat down with Mark and, you know, I said, hey, man, what the hell happened? And, you know, we just rehashed what you and I just discussed right now. And I said, look, man, I said, here's the deal. I know y'all do a lot of fights in Dallas. I think you've done about three. I know LFA actually did their very first. They've only done one. But Legacy's done about three down in Deep Ellum, which is my stomping grounds, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you about Deep Ellum, all right? So my nickname is the Rockstar for a reason. When people ask me, the answer is simple. It's because I'm a fucking rock star. You know what I'm saying? You got any more stupid questions?
Big rock star.
But to really dive a little deeper into that, Deep Ellum is a part of Dallas where they have a lot of clubs, a lot of underground clubs, a lot of music venues that are down there. And I've been going down there for 20 years, man, since I was a kid. In my teenage years, back in the day, man, I'm talking in the mid-90s, you know, when metal shows used to get fucking crazy, man, when, you know, shows like White Zombie and Slipknot and Deftones were packed in these tiny little clubs, man. And you know, the kids in my generation, Generation X, your generation, tried to rip the fucking building down. And that's how I came up. And then, you know, years later, when I started playing in bands, I played a lot of shows down there. So I feel like that's my stomping ground. I feel like, you know, LFA is going out there putting on these fights, man. I can't, you know... I can't let somebody beat me up on my own stage, so they've got to. I feel like they have to get me on one of those cards, man. Even if it's another amateur prelim, or I mean, I feel like I'm just about ready to step up to pro, to be honest with you. And maybe I should just go ahead and take that leap of faith, because I think that pro favors me in a lot of ways. Because in Texas, the only difference, with amateurs is that you cannot throw elbows. Don't ask me why. You can't throw elbows. You can throw head kicks. You can throw a knee to the head as long as you don't have, like, the Muay Thai plum and you pull it down. Again, explain that one to me. I mean, MVP caved a guy's head in without even putting his hands on him. You know, it was just a knee. Of course, that's a different animal, but you understand my point. But that's literally it, and the rounds are a little bit longer. I actually am kind of a slow starter. I'm a slow burn kind of guy. If you and I were to get outside and sprint right now, you could probably beat me. But if we were to run 3 miles, there's not a lot of people that are going to beat me. You know what I'm saying? When it comes to distance. So a three minute round, you know, if you look at both of my fights, I won, you know, by submission towards the end of the round because it took me a little bit of time to sort of get going. So again, I think elbows, I think 5 minute rounds favors me. But my point is Deep Ellum is my... That's my hostile territory, man. That's my killing field. The Bomb Factory is the venue that they always play, and that's another heavy metal venue. And I said, I've slayed the stage at almost every single club down there, and there's about, you know, 6 to 8 music venues, and it's only 3 blocks. Deep Ellum is nothing but 3 streets that are about, you know, a city block in either direction. So... but yeah, he said, and plus I'm from Dallas, you know, and I told him, look, man, I'm not from San Antonio. I can sell tickets. I'm not going to draw as well, but if I'm in Dallas, you know, I'm born and raised there. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to draw a lot better. And I actually have a team of fighters and coaches that I started with that would be willing to on a moment's notice. You know what I'm saying? If I put up the old bat signal, you know, they've already promised me without me even having to ask. They've already promised me, hey, I'll be there to corner you, man. You just you know, say the word. So
yeah, I was honestly thinking the same thing when I was looking through and reading your Twitter plight, or not so much your plight, but just watching and listening and seeing what was happening to you at this show. And of course, like you said, you broke the news that you were going to be fighting on this show on the LFA 6 on our show, and it didn't come to fruition. I was thinking exactly the same thing that you just said, that, you know, it's the age that, you know, that people are looking at and they're going, oh, I don't know so much about this guy. He's 35 years old. But, dude, every time I see you in a picture where you're facing up and you're knuckling up, I wouldn't want to mess with you. Hashtag rockstar, right?
Yeah, Yeah, no, I'm telling you, man. Like, and my stare down is mean as fuck too. I mean, we're like at the weigh-ins, man. That's what, and I learned that from Mike Tyson. Has this amazing little monologue on this documentary, and I don't know what the name of the documentary is, but it's on the excerpt that I'm referring to is on YouTube, and he talks about how, because everybody gets nervous, and I always want to try to figure out, like, how do I deal with that? Like, what do I do? Because I look up all of my, heroes, the people that I admire and respect, and I wonder, like, do they go through the same thing? When I interview fighters, I always ask them things that will help them, not only make a good interview with them, but also to help maybe benefit my fighting career as well, to get advice, pick their brain, and I've also read a lot of things, like even GSP, he's got certain little quirks that he does. He gets super nervous, but he has this thing where he sort of tricks his mind into believing, okay, when I walk through that gate, when I walk through the threshold, like, I'm invincible. I cannot be beaten. So that's kind of one of those things. Matt Brown has a similar thing. He says that when he does his walkout, he and I've interviewed Matt Brown a couple times, not GSP, of course, but Matt Brown I have. And he says that he goes out there, Matt Brown goes out there with the mentality, like, that he's ready to die. Like, he's literally ready to put his life on the line, because I think that guy's a true, like, Spartan warrior. He's probably born in the wrong century, if I'm honest. Matt Brown is a killer. But anyway, the Mike Tyson deal about the stare down is a big part of it. Believe it or not, it does matter. Who is more intimidating than Mike Tyson in his prime? I mean, there's never been a more menacing and just scary individual ever in the history of fighting that in my lifetime for sure, and probably of all time, quite frankly. And it's Mike Tyson. But guess what? He admits, that he would get nervous. He would sit in the back, and he said, I would, he said for months I would train and I would have nightmares about this guy beating me and humiliating me in front of the world, and I was just full of fear. And as I'm getting my hands wrapped, I just start feeling more confident and more confident. And then he said, I walk out there, and as I walk through into the arena, I feel like a god. I feel unbeatable. And then when I get into the ring, I stare into my opponent's eyes, and I wait to see them glance away. And he said, the moment that I see that, I know that I've got him beaten. And so, yeah, brother, I appreciate the compliment. But, yeah, I mean, I think even sometimes I look back at my own photos, especially, like, on stage, doing a heavy metal show, and I go, damn, looking like a fucking demon. But, yeah, when I stare a guy down, before the fight or at the weigh-in, I'm just piercing right into his soul and just letting him know with my eyes, and I mean it. It's not a bluff. It's not a, because you can tell when guys do that too. You can tell when guys are nervous and they try to sort of puff up and they have that defense mechanism. But no, for me, it's real. I kind of have like that same Matt Brown mentality. Like, you know what? We're going to war. I've been to war. For real, I'm a soldier. So,
Yeah.
going into a fist fight, I mean, that's easy. I mean, it's not
Yeah,
easy. You know what I
and
mean?
that's yeah, no, that's the kind of thing that I see in your eye, and I just I thought it was kind of a travesty that you didn't get a fight because we were talking about it and we wanted to have you on and you were training and anyways, long story short, I hope you get something in the future because and if you want to move if moving up to pro is what you need to do, I think that's what you need to do, but. But even if you if your career is just in the media because you're doing a great job doing that, and let's move on because I want to talk about Mackenzie Dern, and I'm just gonna say hashtag cue the music real quick, and then I'm not gonna cue the music. Anyways, let's get back to serious business. Mackenzie Dern. I mean, the question has been raised this week. How would she fare in the UFC? And of course, you were there, you saw her performance live. And is Mackenzie Dern really prepared for the UFC at this point, or are we just reaching? And hang on one more time, hashtag cue the music. All right, Rodney James, go right ahead. Sorry about that.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. You know, the music is spot on. she's dreamy. I mean, I got to meet her face to face, you know, a couple times on the red carpet at the MMA Awards, and then I was very. I told her, I said, hey, you know, I said I'll see you in San Antonio next week. I said a couple of my training partners are fighting on the card, and I was supposed to fight on it, but I'll be there covering as media instead, and so I'm looking forward to it. And then at the weigh-ins, I was hanging out afterwards, you know, just sort of talking to a few folks, a few friends of mine, training partners, what have you. And actually, I was planning to go up to her and, you know, reintroduce myself, but she actually came up to me and gave me a big hug and was like, hey, good to see you. And I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. She actually remembered. And, you know, we chatted for a second, and then that was that. But to answer the question, I saw that fight from the best seat in the house, my friend. I mean, I was literally standing right next to the cage. I mean, just right outside the apron. It was a great fight. She fought a girl that's also a 1-0. But UFC, yeah, I mean, we're reaching, definitely. She has a lot of work to do. There's a lot of things that I see, you know, I felt like she got hit a little too much. And then the fact that she wasn't able to finish, you know, somebody that was nowhere near her level of jiu-jitsu. And I realize it's MMA, but I mean, look, you know, I mean, how do you think, of course, Damian Maia is a really seasoned fighter. But let's say Damian Maia has a comparably skilled opponent, right, in comparison to himself, like Mackenzie Dern did, right? A girl who's 1-0 versus a girl who's 2-0, right? Damian Maia is going to absolutely wreck anybody as soon as he gets you on the ground, unless you're a really high-level guy, you know what I mean? So I don't know that there are a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu gals in the MMA world besides McKenzie, but there's a lot of work to be done. The stand-up looked great, though. A lot of great improvement. She's definitely on track. I hope that she stays on track and then doesn't get scooped up by Bellator beforehand, because I think that if you build her up correctly, you know, Ben Henderson said that she was going to be bigger than Ronda. I mean, that remains to be seen. She's still so fresh and young in her career. It's, you know, still so early, but at 3-0, she's off to a good start. Benson Henderson actually was there. He was cornering her for the fight. But I figure 3 or 4 more fights at least. I can't see. Unless she comes out with, like, her next two against really game opponents and just dominates, then I could see maybe a UFC shot, because of the, you know, the how shallow the divisions are. But she also missed weight. That's another thing to, you know, worth noting. You know, she can't be trying to fight at 115 pounds if she's not going to be able to make the weight. So.
Yeah, that's the next question I wanted to lead you into is of course she didn't make the weight. And we have talked on this show about weight cutting and having a 125 women's division in all of MMA. And I don't think that it's any more prevalent, you know, here with Mackenzie Dern and, you know, Valerie Letourneau. I mean, there are plenty of women fighters that could benefit from this 125 division. So let's get into this real quickly. And of course, she did miss weight and she had to give up a percentage of her purse. So let's speak on that a bit, Rodney. Please feel free.
Well, you know, it was unexpected, you know, but at the same time, thinking about another, you know, smoking hot chick that's a smoking hot prospect in MMA, was the last event that I covered, and that was Bellator. Anastasia Yankova, you know, missed weight as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, is it a sense of like, you know, these girls are getting a little too much of a push and you know, trying to be built up to the point where they're not taking it as serious as they should? I think so. I mean, that's my opinion. I could be wrong, but I feel like that's a little bit of, you know, part of it. But on the other hand, it's a discipline thing too. But at the same time, you know, I'm very critical. If you've heard me talk on MMA Junkie about this, I'm very outspoken about, you know, making weight, about weight cutting. You know, that's a hot button item for me. However, when it comes to females, you know, I do tend to kind of stay out of the conversation because their bodies are different. And, you know, I can't criticize a female because I think them cutting weight in the first place is just completely crazy because I know it's just not the same. It's not, you know, for a guy like me, I'm 190 pounds right now. You know, I'll fight at 170. But getting down to that weight, you know, it's just a matter of discipline. It's not this. It's not this crazy, like insane, like monster obstacle that everyone tries to make it out to be. It's just not. I promise you, it's not. It's that guys just don't do it right and they're not disciplined. So with females, it's a little bit of the same. But we'll see what happens next time around. I'll tell you this, and this is not a knock on her because I told you, I mean, at the red carpet, she looked great. But she definitely looked she was holding a lot more water, if you know what I mean, than at the weigh-ins. I mean, she was pretty gaunt, you know what I mean? And so it sounds to me like she's walking around much, much heavier. And you just can't do that, you know? If you want to try to compete in a certain weight class, you need to know what range that you need to be in within. You know, you don't need to be walking around way too heavy, you know, like we saw Khabib doing, and he, you know, ruined a potentially amazing co-main event at 209 because of a lack of discipline.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about weight cutting issues on this show, but I want you to go ahead and say Anastasia's name one more time, please.
Anastasia Yankova.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so yeah, no, let's get to the World MMA Awards, because that's what I wanted to get to next, and of course that was tying into the Mackenzie Dern, because you did, you know, meet her on the red carpet, and we saw it on Twitter, and I was very excited for you, and, you know, let's get your coverage and your breakdown of the MMA Awards, because you were there and live and direct in person.
Man, it was awesome. It was such an honor and a privilege to be a part of that. Such a cool event, man. And you know what? I figured out quickly that, you know, the MMA media, as it were, does not really take part in that. And I feel like that's a big missed opportunity. But, you know, if you also look at a lot of the MMA media, it's very non-traditional. It's a lot of people that sort of – there are very few on-camera, on-air talent type people, you know what I mean, that you can just recall from memory right off the bat. You know, you think of Ariel, you think of Luke Thomas, you know, people like that. But most people are sort of writers, you know, or they do a lot of interviews, things like that. But being on the red carpet and suited up, you know, I mean, you're up there with, you know, people from ESPN, the local news from in Vegas, all of these other, you know, sort of heavyweights that just kind of, you know, push us little, you know, MMA media guys to the side. But I thought it was awesome. Now, there weren't quite as many people as I was hoping that would come through the red carpet, but there were quite a lot. Some of the content I didn't release yet, but we'll talk about that too. As far as Mackenzie, yeah, super nice gal, very friendly, very cool. Got a nice little, you know, short little soundbite slash red carpet interview with her. She was up for an award, you know, submission of the year for her second fight, which was that it was like a omoplata, like rear naked choke sort of hybrid combo, what have you. So that was pretty crazy. But, of course, the award went to Nate Diaz. Well-deserved. That was an amazing win over Conor McGregor. And, what else did you want to know? Anything else? I mean, I met Misha on the red carpet. That was the very last person to come through. Biggest star, you know, by far. Uriah Faber also. Cody Garbrandt. Super cool guy. Cody is very intense, man. To meet him face-to-face and shake his hand and talk to him, like, he's a cool guy. Very, very intense. Big John McCarthy, he was cool. Everybody's cool. Everybody's real cool. But, you know, Mike Bisping was up for like four awards. He was up for Fighter of the Year, International Fighter, Knockout, Comeback of the Year. He was the most nominated person at the event, and he didn't come through the red carpet. So I did get a chance to talk to him on his radio show last week, actually, and I asked him about that, and he said that he wasn't informed. I guess he wasn't aware that the event was going, the red carpet event. And I thought, well, that's kind of a missed opportunity for whoever manages him. But then again, he was admittedly on a bender out there, so maybe he was just too loaded.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we saw the video of him, arguing with Eddie Bravo. We saw, you know, his poor effort with GSP. I mean, fella looked loaded in both videos, and especially with GSP. So it must have been a very interesting weekend for you. And of course, I just wonder why, if you can answer this for me, why is John Morgan, I mean, this is second year in a row he hasn't been up for Journalist of the Year. I just don't understand, because, you know, Ariel's not doing the same thing that John Morgan is, but, you know, Ben Folks isn't doing the same thing Ariel is either. You know, I just don't understand why John's not on there.
I don't know. Maybe they just didn't, you know, maybe they just want to double tap on MMA Junkie, and they just, you know, decided to just go with one. But there's a lot of people that I don't understand why are not on there. You know, I fully expect, you know, one of my mentors and one of the co-owners for the outlet that I write for and work for, and that's MMA Latest News. He's also with Flow Combat. I'm talking about Jim Edwards. You know, I expect to see him on there. And Damon Martin. To me, I see what you're saying about John Morgan. You know, he's definitely very prevalent in the scene for sure, especially the guy who really brought the MMA media to the forefront, you know, I mean, along with Ariel. So, yeah, you make a valid point. I mean, because one of the reasons that I got into MMA Junkie in the first place was because back when, you know, apps and smartphones were really starting to saturate the market, you know, I just wanted a good place to get MMA content, and there really just weren't any apps, you know, MMA Junkie, and they didn't even have ads, you know, I mean, that's how green that they were at the time. I mean, as far as their online presence, their app goes anyway. And then they started getting advertisers. Then they start, you know, now they have to deal with USA Today. And so that's the level he's on. So you're right. I mean, that's definitely worth noting. But I expect Damon Martin to be on the ballot. Damon Martin, I think, is just as good or better than anybody that was on that list this year. It's actually getting a little ridiculous with Ariel winning every single year. I mean, it's kind of just, he's kind of the only one that really does what he does.
Exactly.
This year, I'm going to be launching my own product, and of course, you know, in typical rock star fashion, it's going to be unlike anything that's out there. Whether people take to it or not, that's on them. If they do, then they're, you know, then cheers to them, and if not, then that's their loss. You know what I mean? But what my content is going to be is a little more, I wouldn't say abrasive, but, you know, like a good buddy of mine is Adam Hunter from MMA Roasted, who I also got to hang out with when I was there. I got to see him perform live. Dean Thomas opened up the show. I hung out with Adam a little bit in L.A. as well, went to his show in L.A. a couple nights before. But that's my point. You know, you've got people that are doing different things. He was a big part of the MMA Awards too. You know, there were three skits. I don't know if you saw them, but
yep.
It's cool, man. A colleague of mine, Derek Bowe, he's another writer, formerly of MMA Latest News, and he and I went to the show to see Adam Hunter in LA, and we actually got a little sneak peek at the videos that were shown at the MMA Awards. That was cool. That was really cool to see a candid little, yeah. See those videos. But anyway, yeah, that's my point.
Yeah.
You know, my point is you got to have something a little bit different. I love how, your brand, it falls up under the banner. I don't know if it still does, but the AMP, another MMA podcast. I think that's an awesome take, you know, because it's like, it's commentary on the fact that there is such market saturation, and who knows, we'll see what happens
exactly
10 years from now. You know, something's going to have to give. But yeah, there's more people that are coming out. Ariel is not the only person doing this. He's considered the best because he has the biggest audience. But you're going to see Rodney James coming out with something completely different than anybody else has. It's going to be more in the vein of Howard Stern minus the smut, minus the, you know, the toilet humor, but just the realness, not so much raunchiness, but more vulgar, you know, because that's just who I am.
You know, we look forward to that and keep tuned to at Rodney James 138. Now I'm going to get you out of this, out of here on this, because I find this very interesting. And for a fighter or a person who is constantly training, I heard earlier on, and we were talking about the Brazilian cowboy and how he got that submission against Dirty Bird, if you remember last week. And it threw me back to, you know, the first time we ever saw someone throw a body triangle on someone, and it was Ivan Salivary, and I can't remember off the top of my head who he was fighting, but he threw a body triangle on someone, and he finished the fight just with the body triangle. And this week, this past week, we saw Ray Borg, you know, have the answer for the body triangle, and he got out of that. So from a fighter's point of view, I mean, I'm having trouble framing this question. How has the game changed? Because we see, you know, back in the day, Ivan Salivary using just a body triangle, getting a tap, and now we see a guy not only surviving the body triangle, we see most guys surviving the body triangle and getting out of it, like we saw Ray Borg. So from a fighter's point of view, you know, let's talk about how the game has changed and how the body triangle has come into MMA.
Now, that's a great question for me, because I love the body triangle. If you look at my last fight, if you look at some of the still photos that were taken from cage side by the RFA photographer, that's exactly, what I did to secure the rear naked choke. As a guy who's 6'2" and lanky, the body triangle is very much an option for me. And so I love using it. It depends on who you're going up against, though, because I roll with some guys, one of the coaches actually up at my school, and I've rolled with him, and he just somehow, he knows how to do it. It's a matter of flexibility, because when I've tried to lock it in on him, he's actually tapped me out when I had him in the body triangle. How he did it, I can't really explain. He basically just kicked his leg over the outside and around my leg, like not the leg that's across his body, but the other one, and it just wrenches down on it, which causes my own leg, the one that is locked around his body, to bend really awkwardly and cause me to tap out on more than one occasion. But there's nobody else can seem to do that. I've only seen maybe one or two other guys ever that were able to do that to me. But to answer your question, how has it changed? I mean, man, the 10th Planet, and really I can tell you this just from visiting 10th Planet a couple of times. I've been up to the school up in Austin. Tim Kennedy trains there a lot. You know, Andrew Craig, formerly of UFC, you know, as one of the coaches up there. That's an awesome school, but it was an eye-opener. You know, it was when I went up there for the Bellator event, as a matter of fact. I dropped in there, and I trained with Tenth Planet, and it was like, it's a whole different style, man. It's a totally different game of jiu-jitsu, and the way that they do these leg locks and these transitions, it's a big, big part of how they employ their jiu-jitsu. And so that's one of the reasons why you're seeing so much evolution. You're seeing a lot more of these leg locks, a lot more of these crazy sweeps, and all of these just sort of flying acrobatic sort of jiu-jitsu moves.
Yes.
that originate from the ground, you know? Whereas before, the philosophy was, if we're talking about being on the ground, whether it's body, let's say we're talking body triangle, but then I reverse you and I then turn myself around, I get enough space to turn around, and now I'm in your guard, your open guard. Well,
right.
You know, you don't really see a lot of guys use a closed guard in MMA. You still occasionally see it, but you don't see a lot of guys. Most of the time it's butterflies, because most of the time guys are using that to set up a sweep, to move into something else, transition, to work their submissions from there. And I've really gotten comfortable with doing that, to the point where I don't even like doing closed guard for any reason ever, because it's so easy, because people are figuring out ways, you know, hey, if I could drop down for a leg lock, and I got a guy committed on his back to locking in this guard the way that he's been taught to do for so many years, well, guess what? If a guy's good at dropping back and doing that leg lock, and he can throw on a knee bar or some type of toe hold, hey, man, you got precious little time to get out of that. Otherwise, you're going to be seriously injured. But if you're the guy who's trying to move, and you're talking about MMA versus just pure jiu-jitsu, you also have precious little time to make your opponent tap, because if he does not and he knows how to defend, then he's going to start dropping bombs on you, and you're on the bottom.
All right, Rodney. I mean, thank you very much. I mean, that was some serious fighter IQ. And you know, that's what I love about having fighters on the show, because we get that kind of info that the regular person or the regular journalist can't get into. Okay, Rodney, let's get you a little bit of love. Of course, we know we can follow you at RodneyJames138, but let's push your, you know, MMA latest, anything you've got coming out, anything you want to push, please go ahead right now.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. So April 8th, there's another event that's taking place at the HEB Center up in Austin. It's the same place that Bellator, you know, it was the same venue that hosted Bellator when they came through Austin the last time around, a couple months back when we talked about it. It's a new promotion, and it's a local fighter, actually. He's an amateur fighter. He's getting ready to make his pro debut in July, though. And Bubba McDaniel, actually, we talked about him a little bit earlier in tonight's show. He's actually making a comeback. He used to fight at middleweight. I don't know if you know this, but he used to cut a lot of weight. He used to, like, really cut weight and get seriously dehydrated. He decided just to abandon that completely, and he's fighting at heavyweight. So he's coming back into fighting, and he's going to headline that card. I've got an interview with him tomorrow, and then I have an interview with the promoter, Stetson Horn. That's the guy I was telling you about. He's a local fighter that went and got his promoter's license and went and built a brand, and this is going to be his first event. And so the last guy that I fought, Waylon Braunstrup, he also fought on that Bellator card we just talked about, and he's going to be fighting on this Strike League card on April 8th. And, of course,
excellent.
As always, I'm standing by in case I'm needed.
Yeah, and Yes, Rodney, we really want to push and say to LFA, come on, get Rodney a fight. He wants to fight. Get him in there. I mean, you had him booked. And you couldn't find an opponent. Come on, LFA, let's get on it. Rodney James needs a fight, right, Rodney?
Yeah, man. Especially under that brand, I love those guys, and especially in Dallas. I think that's maybe this summer. We'll see.
All right, guys. Well, follow Rodney's work on MMA Latest. And Rodney, I have your song, so I'm going to play you out. So don't hang up. I'm going to play you out right now. Thank you, Rodney.
What's up, y'all?
All right, thank you, bro.
My name is Rodney James Edgar.
Go ahead. Speak over. Your name is Rodney James Edgar. Go ahead. Sit. All right, Rodney, thank you very much. Follow him again on Twitter, RodneyJames138. Have a good night, brother.
All right, my friend, you too. Thanks.
All right, cheers. Bye-bye. All right, guys, that is going to do it for tonight's event. I think Rodney was trying to say something there on the end, and I cut him off with the song, but that's just how it goes, man. Got to produce, got to get this stuff done. You know what I mean? Got to get it done. Okay, so listen, pay attention. We've got shows all over the place coming out. I wanted to thank, first of all, at MMA Junkie George. He's going to be coming in every month, hopefully. Maybe on a Thursday, maybe on a Sunday show, but we're going to call it Championship Rounds with Gorgeous George Garcia. And we hope that you guys enjoy it, because you know what? GG is a wealth of knowledge, and you know, we're gonna pick his brain, and I'm gonna run some music now while I'm speaking. So fight the power, by the way. All right. So every day in prime time, we have the MMA Minute. We do it when we can. Keep your eyes and ears out Sunday, this week in MMA. Of course, we're going to be recapping what happens on the UFC London card. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to see that card because it's the middle of the day, and that's no good for me because I work. But I'm sure everybody else in the AMP team will be dialed in. They'll be ready to go on Sunday for this weekend in MMA. And of course, we'll have a pick show. No, we won't have a pick show because there's no show after this show for a couple of weeks until UFC 210 in Buffalo, New York. And of course, I've mentioned I will be coming at you live and direct from that show, ladies and gentlemen. I will be doing my very best to get as much content out as possible. It's still a work in progress, but I think we're gonna get some video content out, and hopefully we're going to sit down with maybe Ryan Moody and do something with him, and maybe Lerone. We can see him live and direct, because I think maybe he's going to come to that show, and maybe we can wrangle Russ from Boston. Hashtag Junkie Nation. Hashtag cue the music. Not for Russ from Boston, just throw it in there. But Russ. Let's get Russ on the show, hopefully, and yeah, guys, I think that's going to do it for me. I mean, we've gone almost 2 hours tonight giving you guys the behind the curtain view of how we do some shows, and we put Slam 2 shows in together today, and I hope you guys enjoyed them. So thank you very much, everybody that's listening. I know, Josh, you're on the line live, and Pam, I don't like Duke. Even though you keep sending me pictures of yourself in a Duke shirt. Ugh. I don't even see it. It's like I can't see it. So, whatever. I mean, thank you for the smile, but I can't see what you're wearing. All right, guys. I love you all, and I'm going to end it this. Good night. Signing out from the mean streets of Brantford, Ontario. We'll see you on Sunday. UFC London. We'll recap it. Night night.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.